from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
For the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. See if we can remember how to do this on a Tuesday. I hope everybody had a safe and fun memorable Memorial Day weekend. Thank you, everybody, for bearing with us. We were out Friday, and then we were out Monday. But we're back locked in now. What's up, James?
4-day weekend. I didn't even know what to do with myself.
Kind of a 4-day weekend. We had a little work to do on Friday.
We did have a little
powwow to get to.
Yeah, yeah. It was nice.
Shindig.
I enjoyed that too. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah, it was
always
a good time.
Always good to sit around a table and throw ideas about synergy and workflow.
And to drink scotch. Scotch all day long.
I don't want to name names. I'm not going to name names. That too, but separately. I'm not going to name names. I arrived early. I had to stop into the station real quick to talk to one of our colleagues here. And anyways, got to our meeting place early. And someone, I'm not going to say who, pours me up a glass of tequila at 10:40 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. That's rough.
I didn't know on my bachelor party wasn't drinking at 10:40 in the morning.
No,
I think I was awake at 10:40.
If I drink anything before like 3 o'clock, I have to take a nap. I have an afternoon nap in my future. I have a sip of anything, I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah. Like
today's over.
The rest of my nap.
Yeah, dude. I can't. I'm not one of those people that can have something to drink and then just like go about my day. I can have a beer at lunch or whatever, but if you're pouring me up tequila, bourbon, whatever.
Yeah.
At 10:40 in the morning, that's setting a tone that I cannot get out of for the rest of my day.
Oh, yeah. A beer at lunch, I need a pillow. Like, it needs to come with a pillow. Like, oh, look at that. A beer at lunch. Oh, that's good.
And you're out. And you're gone. Yeah, man. It was a little bit different experience for me. But, you know, we had a good time.
Yeah.
And we will hopefully see some of the fruits of our meeting come to bear here at the radio station. But you guys don't care about that. We have a ton to get to. NBA playoff stuff. The Mike Brown situation, contract situation, continues having news, which is bad. And we will talk about that. But before we get to anything else, of course, if you missed it, Bill Walton, NBA legend, college basketball legend, broadcasting legend, all-around incredible person, passed away yesterday at the age of 71. And James, we were talking about this a little bit before the show. On the internet, there's always, when somebody passes away, there's always, you know, the eulogizing and the support and RIP and, you know, here's a memory, this person, that person, whatever. But then you'll have that little section of screw that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Or, I didn't like her. Here's a bad thing they did. And, okay. And I kept waiting for that to happen with Bill Walton yesterday. But it was just all day.
Universal outpouring of love. Just absolutely. Like, I think if Bill Walton would be so proud of the reaction. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it was the pictures were crazy. I mean, like all kinds of wild stuff dating all the way back to the 60s. Him getting arrested. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, the UCLA anti-war protest. Yeah.
Yes. You know, pictures of him walking out to throw out a first pitch in San Francisco wearing some crazy Grateful Dead, like full 7 to 8 foot tall bodysuit. Yeah. Like just some incredible, incredible pictures. I mean, John Fogerty sent out something. Barack Obama sent out something. Like it was one after another after another. Just really, really amazing to watch the outpouring of love for Bill Walton.
Man, did you read the? There were so many incredible Bill Walton stories, ranging from funny to heartfelt.
Uh-huh.
Did you read the one that Katie Baker wrote in The Ringer when she talked to Mike Breen?
No.
So Mike Breen relayed this story. I'm going to shorten it here, but Mike Breen's dad had started dealing with, I believe, Alzheimer's or dementia,
mm-hmm.
one of the two. And he and his family wanted to take him to the USS... oh my God, I had this story all laid out and now I can't remember the name, but one of the ships that his dad actually served on was a museum in San Diego.
Okay.
They had that ship docked there and you could go in.
The Maritime Museum in San Diego.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could go about this boat that his dad actually served on.
Okay.
Back in 1955 or whatever. And so Mike Breen had called Bill Walton to ask him about the San Diego kind of area. And Bill Walton offers to let Mike Breen and his family stay at his house.
Mm-hmm.
And then not only went to the museum with them, but called ahead and let them know, like, hey, a service member who served on this ship is coming. So the ship's like commander comes out and meets with their family. And then Bill Walton does this entire tour with them through this ship.
I cannot imagine being over 7 foot tall and trying to go through a ship
with
like
knee
that.
Knee and back problems.
Oh, yeah.
But did it the whole time. Hung out with his dad for 3 days. Mm. Became friends with Mike Breen's dad in the latter stage of his life. Just an unbelievable... Like, who does that?
Yeah, he's amazing. The big story that I've always told repeatedly is how he blew me up and kicked me out of a media scrum. Mm-hmm. And then... like the after story, which I tell every time too, was that he came over, apologized profusely, like introduced himself. We had a conversation, just super, super nice. Asked me what I did, asked who I worked for. Mm-hmm. Like, and then later on in the evening, he saw me again, pulled me over, introduced me to his wife. Just to, and you know what? I think when Luke was here coaching the Kings,
mm-hmm.
Bill showed up a couple of times, like mm-hmm. maybe two or three times. He would sit in the media room. He would ask questions in the media room of his son. He'd raise his hand, get the mic, and ask questions. The outpouring of love that you could see from mm-hmm. him to his son, to me, was amazing. Absolutely amazing. How much
he
doted on Luke, how much Luke like enjoyed his dad, who is a cartoon character, like being there for him.
In the best way.
Yeah, in like completely in the best way. And I even like I told Luke that story years ago, uh-huh. and Luke's like, that's probably the first story I've ever heard that was like somewhat negative about my dad. I said, but it didn't end up negative. Like we had a good interaction afterwards, and I felt like he just didn't know that that was media time for mm-hmm. everybody and not just him and Jim Gray.
Right.
And like I never got a bad feeling from him. He was always so nice.
Yeah.
And just such a gigantic lumbering man. I mean, he had both of his ankles fused. Mm-hmm. He had a carbon fiber spine, basically. Like he had been through so many surgeries. I don't even know what the total number of surgeries are.
Ungodly amount.
It's more than anyone else I'd ever heard of.
Yeah.
And but he just loved life and like he embraced being Bill Walton.
That is why I know that some people didn't love him on broadcast.
Yeah.
But I adored him on broadcast because I didn't care. Look, dude, I'm watching, and is analysis sometimes nice? Like, yeah, for sure. But hey, such and such fell asleep on that cutter. Like, okay, yeah, we all saw that. I don't need that. When he would just start waxing poetic about a sheep native to the Rocky Mountains because they happened to bring up the University of Colorado. Yes, like that's a person who experienced so many things and who loved existing and who loved the world and just wanted to share it all the time. And that is something that even as a younger person who didn't have that kind of appreciation for life, you know, person in my early 20s, I even loved it then. And I think that's a really good window into, again, the broadcasting lens is so small in relation to life. But when you see how Bill Walton brought his enjoyment of existence to that field in a way that nobody else does, I think it tells you a lot about him.
Yeah, I also wonder how many times did they try to go to commercial break and couldn't? And just like, all right, we're just going to go to commercial break. And then he would keep talking all the way through the commercial break. And then you come back from commercial break like 2.5 minutes later and he's still telling a story.
Still going.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that happened quite a few times. Even when he was on the radio here in Sacramento,
yeah.
He spent a year. I believe it was 1 year and it wasn't a full year. Like I think he did like 15 games as like a third on the broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Little did we know at that time, the Maloofs basically were planning to move the team to Anaheim,
right,
where they were hoping to employ Bill Walton and Jim Gray full time in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had brought them in as like foreshadowing,
yeah.
Which we didn't get the foreshadowing. That was my first season.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, well, this is weird. And
I definitely thought it was strange that he was around all the time.
Oh, yeah. No, he was on the payroll. Yeah, he was.
I thought that was.
Well, that and Jim Gray. I mean, like, again, they removed their sideline reporter who eventually came back, Katie Christensen, to hire Jim Gray. And it was literally, we didn't see it at the time as like, hey, why is this happening?
Right.
It was like, oh, we're trying to spice up the broadcast. It's like, okay, like whatever.
Sure, man.
And then very quickly you realize that they had a plan in place to try to move the team to where those guys lived, you know, into the area where they lived. And so very awkward situation. But again, I thought he was like all of my interactions with him were nice. Like he was always very, very like kind and generous and like just a gigantic, gigantic human being.
And literally.
Yeah.
Like I've told this story, I think, on air before where he asked me for a chair when I was interning over at another radio station. And I bring him a chair, just a normal like chair that they use on the sideline. And he looks down at it and he looks at me and he's like, son, I'm 7 feet tall with bad knees and a bad back. I'm going to need more than that. And I stack up like 8 chairs. And he's like, that's better. And then sits down on a stack of 8 chairs. Insane.
That's amazing.
Anyways.
I'll say this too. Like I was around Luke Walton a lot and like I've had many, many conversations with Luke both on like in front of the media and off the record. And just the love that him and his brothers have for their dad.
Oh.
Like he was a cherished man and now like as like his son who had to grow up the son of Bill Walton, having that as like who you are is not easy. And it doesn't matter. Like they cherished him and everything about him, who he was.
Yeah, no doubt. I certainly did from afar. I know you did as well. Bill Walton dead at 71. We got to shift gears now, as I'm sure, you know, can't talk about Bill Walton for 2 hours. I mean, we could.
But, that would be very Bill Walton-esque.
Yeah. But no, we will talk about the NBA playoffs. Of course, the Celtics punched their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals. Are the Mavericks going to do it tonight? But before we do any of that, we got to talk about Mike Brown and his contract situation because some news came down, of course, from you, James, last week. And then Adrian Wojnarowski had some reporting. Mark Stein had some reporting. And this is now a much bigger mess than it needs to be. So we'll talk about that. Coming up next on The Insiders, we're hanging out with you till noon, and we are sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
That's just the truth, dog.
Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
That guy there is James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're rocking with you until noon on Sacramento Sports Leader. A big shout out to Jiffy Lube and a big shout out to you, James, because your report in the Kings Beat. Subscribe today at thekingsbeat.com. I really got the ball rolling on the Mike Brown contract discussion. Adrian Wojnarowski on Friday reported, quote, "After engaging in contract extension discussions, the Sacramento Kings and coach Mike Brown have tabled talks. There remains a gulf on a potential deal for Brown, who has one guaranteed season left on his contract." Mark Stein also reported, along the lines backing up what you reported on Friday, "It appears that the combination of Brown's desire for a significant salary bump and the Kings' postseason disappointments of the past two springs have given his bosses pause." Yikes, man.
Yeah.
I don't...
This is tough. Like, look, negotiating isn't a great... negotiating in the press...
Sure.
...isn't a great thing. And, like, this has been brewing. It's been coming to a head for a little while, from what I know.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just now seeing it bleed out where, you know, initially you kind of understood what Mike was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think Amick and Slater wrote the number as like 10 to 12 million. We saw that's what they were hoping to negotiate around.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it from Jake Fisher last week, a week and a half ago, that, you know, they were hoping to have a contract around the, 8-figure number. Mm-hmm. Which again, you know, whether that's 10 or 11 million, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those were just what the parameters of negotiations were expected to be around. I don't think that that's where the Sacramento Kings plan on having those discussions be around. And maybe they've come up a little bit from their previous offers, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe there's some momentum as far mm-hmm. as the dollar amount. But I also think that I don't think the two sides are on the same page when it comes to years as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Kings are a franchise that multiple times during the time I've covered the team have been paying, you know, 2-3 coaches, head coaches at one time because they've fired so many mm-hmm. from the previous years that had four-year contracts or 5-year contracts or,
yeah.
you know, still had 2 years remaining on their deal when they got let go.
Mm-hmm.
And so you still have to keep paying those contracts.
No doubt.
And then you hire a new coach and now you got two contracts that you're paying. And then you pay another coach. Mm-hmm. You can get up, you know, it can get a little ugly. But at this point, I ownership wasn't super happy about the way the season ended. And that's
sure.
in general. That wasn't mm-hmm. just aimed at Mike. That was in general. Like they're not sure. super happy that they didn't get a playoff run, that they didn't grow from the previous year, that they didn't get to sell playoff tickets
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff, like in the way that they would have liked to.
Sure.
And so like, look, this is going to be a situation that I'm not sure, like there isn't like some super positive, like this is heading the right direction from everything that I'm hearing. And I don't know if it gets done or not. Like, someone could wake up today and say, you know what, let's just do this thing. Let's just get it over with.
Sure.
Because like it's part of doing business in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of conversation out there about how much the franchise has raised in value over the last few years. We had some people, you know, in the chat yesterday when we had the Kings Beat podcast
mm-hmm.
Who, you know, pointed out that the Kings franchise valuation since making the playoffs has jumped like over $3 billion.
Man.
And it's jumped up a ton. And so like the positive momentum that Mike Brown has something to do with that. Also TV contracts and everything else have something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
But also just like there's a reality that has to be in place here that if it's not Mike Brown, then who? And if it's not $8 to $12 million a year, then what are you doing? Because that's the new going rate for head coaches. And like at some point, whether it's Mike or it's someone else, that's what you're going to be paying. And the guys, again, we can keep saying this, but I don't think people in the back are hearing it. Like this team has been over 500 10 times in their 39 years in Sacramento. 8 of those are Rick Adelman. 2 of those are Mike Brown. Straight up, he ran an 18-game improvement over the previous year in his first year coaching the team. He took a two-game step back in year two, but still ran 46 wins. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a team that should be on the rise. It has a positive vibe going about it that has a culture that's building, mm-hmm. and a lot of that is the Mike Brown culture, and I'm confused why that's not being embraced as much as it is, hey, X's and O's or a couple of wins here, a couple of wins there, and this thing could have totally looked different this year.
Yeah, man. That's my problem with this, is it's not about the dollars. It's not about the years. It's that the Kings et al. Would sit here and look at this because here's how I read it from the Kings' perspective. Everything you just said about, well, if you give a guy a 4-year contract and you fire him in year 2 of that deal, you owe him X amount of dollars over the next 2 years, mm-hmm. because you have to pay him out. You have to pay out that contract, which to me says the Kings are concerned about the direction the team is going or the direction they went this year, whatever it is. And instead of paying Mike Brown up front and saying, you are building a program, here is the going rate for an NBA head coach. There is a really easy comp with Mike Budenholzer and what he just got. What did he get, 10 a year?
He got a 5-year 50, 10 a year.
Right, so 5 and 50, okay, you don't want to give him 10 because Mike Budenholzer has a title, so you want to make it 9 or whatever it is. I don't care. Like I said, the problem for me is the commitment, because this basically says the Kings are saying, we don't want to pay the going rate for a head coach, and if I'm wrong on this, please let me know. I'm viewing this from a space that you're not. The Kings don't want to pay a head coach because if they miss the playoffs next year, they don't want to move forward with Mike Brown. Or if they don't make the growth that they think they should be making, then they don't want to move forward with that coach, which is why they don't want to give him a sizable contract, because they don't trust him enough to stick around for the length of that contract.
Yeah, I would say that as much as it is about the dollar for year one, or year two, it's mm-hmm. the length of the contract that is always going to be in question.
Which is asinine to me.
Yeah.
They're not, that to me says their concern and their priority is not building a program, is not having continuity, and is not saying, great, here is this, we have given Mike Brown and Monty McNair this roster, and let's see where this thing goes over the next 4 to 5 years. I guess if you include the last year, 6 to 7 years, and let's see what this can grow into. It's, I need success now.
Yes.
And if I don't have it now, then we'll find somebody else. And that in itself creates a whole bunch of other problems with players who signed up to play here under Mike Brown, and with players like Malik Monk who may or may not be signing up to play here for Mike Brown.
Yes.
And that's, like I said, the dollars don't even necessarily matter. It's the unwillingness to commit to a coach who has had success. Like, what are you doing? Why is it here?
Yeah, it's the inability to commit to the plan. Like, you chose a path.
Yes.
Right? You chose a path.
They did everything right to this point.
Yeah, and look, there could come a point, I've said this before, there could come a point where Mike Brown can't get you over the hump, where he's a coach that you think, okay, like, let's just say the Kings make it to the Western Conference Finals once mm-hmm. or twice, but you can't get over the hump. And you say, okay, I might need a coach that can get us over the hump. And I don't even know what that coach would look like, to be honest with you, but there might be some coach out there that you think, okay, this guy might be the guy who has a couple of championship rings and can push us over the top in the right situation. Mm-hmm. We just aren't there yet. We're not even close to that. Like, you're trying to build a program, mm-hmm. and that has to be from top down. Like, there has to be an identity of what that program looks like, a way that you're developing players, a way that you're bringing in players for mm-hmm. off-season, the way that you're building your training camp roster, the way you're building everything. Mm-hmm. It has to be a program, a plan that's in place to have everybody moving in the right direction. And I don't know that we're quite there yet. I think that there's an idea of what a program looks like from a couple of sides. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this isn't just a coach and a general manager, there's also ownership involved. And so there's all of these different avenues, and they all have to be on the same page for the synergy has to work for this thing to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And as of right now, I don't know where how close we are to finding that synergy. And I think it's a shame.
Me too. My concern when you say, when as we talk about this, and we'll continue talking about this kind of throughout today's show, but I know Vivek comes from Golden State, and I know that there have been so many things where he's tried to kind of replicate what they did in Golden State. And my biggest fear with this is that he looks at Mike Brown as Mark Jackson in this situation, where the sooner they get out from under this coach, the sooner they can really take off.
Yeah.
And that, again, maybe this is a negotiation tactic, and maybe cooler heads will prevail in August, and or they get together at Summer League and they hash this thing out, and Mike Brown's got a 4-year deal by the time the season starts. But there are just so many things that have led up to this point that make me really, really wary of being optimistic that that's going to happen.
I think that that's realistically the problem.
Yeah.
It's the history here. And like, look, you can compare yourself to the Warriors all you want. If you're willing to pay that tax bill and put that type of talent on the court, then you can start worrying about yes. whether your head coach is the problem or not.
That's it.
But until you do that, which hasn't happened yet,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you got the right man for the job right now.
I'm right there with you. Let's keep talking about this. We got to hit a break. More Mike Brown contract stuff when we get back on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
This is completely BS.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
That's James. I'm Kyle. The Kings and Mike Brown have tabled contract talks, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. Is this... here's something. I'm trying to stay measured here.
Yeah.
Because like you said, I'm going off of everything we know about the Kings over the last 20-ish years, 17-ish years. I'm going off of that. So that's the history that I have to go on here. But maybe somebody wakes up tomorrow or at some point in the middle of June and goes, okay, this is ridiculous. Let's get this thing done and let's continue moving forward with Mike Brown and De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis and Keegan Murray and stay on this path that has been charted for the last two seasons, mm-hmm. Two and a half seasons. That is certainly on the table, and maybe that is what will happen. So I'm trying to stay measured here. Is there any thought in your mind that this is just maybe I'm dramatically overreacting and going, hey, this is Vivek and ownership and whoever else in the front office, this is on them and they need to figure this thing out. Is there a chance that this is purely negotiating where they know that they'll get to whatever number? I'm going to go with 10 because that's the Budenholzer deal. I'm just going to say 10. They know they'll get to 10, but they're hoping he'll take 7. And yeah, okay, they'll get to 10 if it goes to July. But hey, maybe if they put the pressure on, they can get him for a little cheaper.
Yeah, here's my concern. My concern is that Monty McNair went into the season, not this last year, but the year before, in the same exact situation, and Vivek didn't pay him. He let this thing play out during the season. And then you get to like right up against a trade deadline and you're allowing someone to make like massive, massive plans that could impact your franchise for 7 years without a contract. And then in February, they decided to extend Monty McNair and like, hooray, it all got done. This is good, right? That's not the way it works with head coaches. It's different. Front office and head coaches. Front office personnel changes a lot less often than head coaches. Even right. Like I can tell you during my time covering the team, there's an ownership change that happens in 2013. And at that point, Jeff Petrie and his staff goes. Pete D'Alessandro and his staff come in. That lasts a certain amount of time. Then Vlade Divac comes in. And now we got Monty McNair. So 4, right? This is Mike Brown is my 9th head coach. So and some people say, oh, well, like some of those guys are interim head coaches. That's not the case. Only one interim head coach in the entire time that I've covered the team, only one. And that's Alvin Gentry 2 years ago when Luke Walton was let go. Outside of that, Tyrone Corbin was given the full job. He was given a contract for 2 years to be the head coach of the Kings. He went 7-21, I believe is the record. And then George Karl took over and finished the season that year and had 11 wins to finish the season. But that's kind of where we're like, we've been here before, man. And that's what I don't understand. It's if this is what franchises that are perpetually stuck in losing ways do. They keep stopping and starting and going in a different direction again and again and again. I don't know how you asked De'Aaron Fox to do that again. I don't know how you can. I mean, look at how many coaches he's played for.
De'Aaron Fox, who didn't sign an extension, by the way.
Yeah, and that's partially because of the All NBA stuff. But
yeah, that wasn't to say he didn't sign his extension because of this. It's just he's not extended beyond his current deal.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, I just think it's a difficult situation that the Kings are putting themselves in. And I guess you can get 2 years down the road with a head coach and decide that that's not the path you want to go. But at some point, you got to choose somebody and stick with it, right? And I don't understand why we keep spinning our tires here and starting over, because that just makes it really, really difficult. Again, look at people always say, oh, you know, again, Luke Walton is in Sacramento. Everyone, oh, he's a horrible coach. Like, okay. Luke Walton, year one, had a roster. Luke Walton in year two lost his starting shooting guard. And year one, he had his team primed to make the playoffs before the pandemic hits. Mm-hmm. It's all coming down to this game against the Pelicans you know, it's like 8 games left or 10 games left in the season. It's all coming down to this one thing, right? And the Kings have this opportunity to make the playoffs and snap snap the drought. Mm-hmm. You go into that offseason, and instead of bringing back Alex Len and Bogdan Bogdanovic and Kent Bazemore, they sign Hassan Whiteside and they sign Glenn Robinson the third or the second, whatever.
The third.
Yeah, the third. That's it. And so, and mind you, they also tell Nemanja Bjelica, hey, bro, you're not part of the plan. We're going to go with Marvin Bagley. Even though you've been a good starter for us for the last 2 years, we're not even going to use you, really. We're just going to put you on the bench and play out your last year. So Luke Walton goes into that season with literally like six players. That's it. Six players. I don't, what do you, like, how do you expect someone to succeed? And that's
you
where
can't.
I tell people all the time, I don't even know what to tell you about Luke Walton as a head coach. Look at the roster he had.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally like Buddy Hield and De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley, who ends up getting hurt. Like the, oh, they had Corey Joseph, the fastest point guard in the league, backed up by the slowest point guard in the league. One of the fastest power forwards in the league in Marvin Bagley, backed up by the slowest power forward in the league in Nemanja Bjelica. Like, nothing really fit together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how to, and then Luke doesn't get let go in that season. He gets part of year three. He gets part of year three so they didn't have to pay a new head coach and Luke Walton for 2 years. They could pay an interim when they let him go 20-something games into the season. He wasn't going to be the coach for the whole year. No one really felt that at all. I don't even believe he felt that. But they didn't want to pay for a new head coach for 2 years while they're paying Luke Walton.
Mm-hmm.
So they did an interim tag on Alvin Gentry, had him take over the team. So it's really difficult for this thing to, like, you want to see them succeed.
Yeah.
I don't have any stake in this race, but as someone who covers basketball, I would much rather watch a 48-win team that makes the playoffs and has an exhilarating 7-game series against the NBA champion Golden State Warriors than the previous 12 years where your season's over basically in January or February and you're wondering who's getting traded at the deadline to go help some other team. And then you're going to watch three young guys who don't know how to play basketball try to play 35 minutes a game the whole second half of the season because that's where you're at as a franchise. You're playing for a draft pick. You're not playing for like wins and losses.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
It's not.
No.
As somebody who's done radio out here in 2018 and 2019 primarily versus this past year, the seasons like this past year are way better.
Yeah.
It's so much better.
Oh, it's so much better. And like, look. So,
we're all rowing the same direction here.
Yeah, people will tell you how much season tickets have gone up because they're playing better, because that's what's happening.
A stunner.
A stunner.
And that's partly why I think that they're going to get something done here. Because this is not, hey, this roster's a mess. This team is a mess. They're just going to change the head coach because they got to do something. So, no, there's a very clear path forward.
Yes.
And I can't, as you were talking just now, this popped into my head. Mike Brown started saying a lot, at least at the press conferences I was at, started saying, like, we practice offense. We practice the offense.
Yes.
We practice the offense a lot. And he started saying that in press conferences all the time. And I don't know, I never got if somebody said something or whatever. I don't get why he started saying that, but it sticks in my brain, or just popped out of my brain, because I kind of wonder if they believe that the roster should be doing something different than it is.
Okay, so we got to the trade deadline. We had our post-trade deadline discussion with Monty McNair when the Kings traded for Robin Lopez and then waived him.
Right.
Right. So the second time.
Big Robin time addition.
Second time Robin Lopez has been traded to Sacramento
sure.
and then waived. When that happened, Monty was very much, hey, look, the offense isn't where it was last year and we need to get back to where that was. We need to see the offense. We need to see that. Where is it? And so I get that Mike was catching the memo, right? That they want offense, offense, offense. And he's saying, like, that's fine. We're going to do offense, offense, offense. But at the same time, like, there's a reason why the Minnesota Timberwolves and Boston Celtics and even now the Dallas Mavericks.
Mavs defense been really good.
Are three of the four teams in the NBA, Eastern and Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
They're the best defensive teams in the league. Mm-hmm. Two of those teams are the best defensive teams in the league.
Yep.
When you get to the playoffs, if you don't play defense, you're going to get bounced.
Yes.
And that's all Mike's trying to do is establish a culture that involves defense. Got them all the way up to number 13.
Mm-hmm.
All the way up to number 13 in the league and defensive rating by the end of the season. The problem is the offense took a hit. Mm-hmm. Now, you could say, well, the offense took a hit because you're working guys too hard on the defensive end or you're too focused on that. Mike was showing, hey, look, in my practices, three of the drills we're doing are offensive and one is defensive. Three are offensive and two are defensive. Mm-hmm. Four are offensive. One is defensive. Like he was showing, like this is what we're doing. We are really, really pushing the offense more than we are the defense in practice, but our principles are different. There's nothing you can do when players stop hitting shots. When players deviate from their standard, who they have been for years as players, when they stop being that player and you don't have someone else who can step in and be that player instead, there's not a lot you can do.
Or if you don't have a second pitch and can go get a stop.
Yeah.
You learned that, and that's why this is frustrating. You learned that literally in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You learned that when Kevin Huerter couldn't hit a shot, and Domantas Sabonis was struggling, and De'Aaron Fox broke his finger, and Keegan Murray was in his first ever playoff series and kind of finding his way. You needed to have some kind of recourse when the shots weren't going down, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And now the concern is they don't do enough offense?
Yeah.
That's the other piece of this that I can't shake when I go, of course they're going to get something done. Because I'm trying to talk about, like the summer league, they'll get together, they'll talk about summer league, and they'll get a contract done, and everything will be fine going into camp. But then, do they look at this and go, wow, look at the Pacers. Look at how many points they score. Wow, look at Boston. Look how many points they're scoring. Look at Kyrie and Luka. Look at all the points they're putting and going, hey, we need to do something different than whatever it is we're doing.
But Kyle, we learned in the playoffs. We learned just just from the Celtics series that they just won 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
I kept saying, I said it in the previous series with the Knicks, why are the Knicks trying to run with the Pacers? Don't run with them.
Right.
Slow them down. Put them in mud.
Right.
Game one. They tried to run with the Pacers, and they almost got beat, and they got lucky to escape. Game two, three, four, stopped running.
Mm-hmm.
Slowed the game down.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
And they won. Mm-hmm. They swept. That's like the coaching adjustment that had to happen, and that's why you can't just be an offensive team in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a counter to just an offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't disagree, dude.
Yeah.
I'm there. I'm trying to suss out my lack of confidence that something's going to get done. And I think part of it is it wouldn't shock me if it came out eventually, whether it's 2-3 years down the road and they move on from Mike Brown and they got somebody else in. And we'll do it this way. Let's say Mike Brown goes into this year without a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kings don't do what the front office and ownership believe they should do. So they jettison Mike Brown. They don't re-sign him and they bring somebody else in. That person that they bring in, I promise, is going to be like an offensive-minded, forward-thinking coach.
Okay.
I don't think that's right. But when I'm talking about my worries with this, that's a worry that jumps out, is that that's the kind of coach they really want.
Okay, but here's the problem. This all happened once before.
Uh-huh.
You had Michael Malone. They let Michael Malone go. I go into the owner's lounge at Arco Arena, and I sit down with Vivek Ranadive for like 15 minutes. And all he keeps saying is, I don't want a Sousa marching band leader. I want a jazz band leader. I want a jazz band leader. I want free flowing. I want this to be like everyone's got their own, they're marching to their own drummer, and it's a flow offense. I don't want this ritualized, like everyone has to play defense in this forceful. And so Malone, his whole like last part of his first year and the early part of his second year before he was let go, kept saying the word pace, but in a negative connotation. He kept saying, yeah, everyone wants pace. They want pace. But we have to play defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what you did is they had an idea to bring in George Karl, but things were getting a little dicey. They had Tyrone Corbin take over in the interim, but then paid him to not be an interim. And then they bring in George Karl, which is exactly what you're talking about. George Karl is one of the great offensive minds the game has ever seen. Like, he uses Vance Wahlberg's dribble drive motion offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing that John Calipari used for at Kentucky and at Memphis. It's this very specific. It's what we see in the NBA. It's corner threes. It's get to the basket and either score at the rim or kick out for the corner three. Those are both really, really high percentage shots that get you 1.2 points per possession.
Right.
If you're 60% at the rim, 40% from three, no one can keep up with you.
Yep.
Right. Except for George Karl wins 59 games and gets bounced in the first round of the playoffs with his Denver Nuggets.
Yep.
Like, that's what happens. And so we keep going through this same cycle where you bring in a defensive-minded coach who brings in an offensive coordinator. You had the number one rated offense in the league a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're that far away. Like, you got to figure out what happened this year, but it what happened this year is not that the Kings stopped playing offense because Mike Brown only wanted them to play defense.
Sure.
It's something as simple as your starting shooting guard had one of his worst career years, that your starting small forward took a step back as a 31-32-year-old and had one of his worst years. And so you're trying to bring along a Keegan Murray. You're trying to give some of these other pieces, you know, a bigger platform and asking them to do more. And in year one, they didn't regress as much as they plateaued.
Sure.
And then they had five or six games where they blew because they couldn't hit free throws.
Right. And they plateaued because they had the same roster.
They did.
Here's the other frustrating thing about all this. If Malik Monk doesn't get hurt against the Mavericks, I'm of the mind that the Kings probably go to the playoffs.
I am also of the mind that they go to the playoffs.
And so we're deciding the future of your team and whether Mike Brown should be paid over 4 or 5 years or however long he wants on his deal. You're over a Malik Monk injury?
Yeah.
Like, if Monk had stayed healthy and is everything hunky-dory now? Like, everything is, they're all of a sudden happy with Mike Brown? Or happy with the way the season went? That's the other piece of this that I can't, it's like, if you can do this two ways. You can be upset with the way the season went, which to me, that should have happened in January.
Yeah.
January was the cutoff for hey, this is not the same team as last year. They're not, yeah, maybe they make the playoffs, but man, I don't know. This team is not it. In which case, make a decision then with your coach. If you believe that that's on the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, if it's simply, we didn't make the playoffs, so we need to see him make the playoffs again. Look at the injury stuff. Your starting shooting guard.
Yep.
And Malik Monk both got hurt at key points of the season.
Yeah, and I'll keep saying it. You didn't just lose 25 points per game. You lost almost 8 assists per game.
Mm-hmm.
That was
spacing.
That was your secondary playmaking. Both of them were your secondary playmakers. Mm-hmm. Once you lost that, you became so singularly dimensional.
Yeah.
You were not multi-dimensional.
You were
so one-dimensional as an offense, and it was okay, we know what's coming.
And, dude, and I know De'Aaron Fox, clutch player of the year last year,
yep,
all respect to him in those situations. Malik Monk was their guy this year, was their closer.
Yeah.
Go look at all the clutch stats, everything. It was Malik this year. And you lose that guy with, 10 games left, 8 games left?
Yeah.
And you just couldn't, it was really clear they just did not have that extra gear to get where they needed to go.
Yep.
That to me is not the coach. And if you can't look and see that, if it was literally just, hey, if they had made the playoffs, he'd have an extension right now. Then give him the extension if you're that happy with it.
Yeah.
Because you could chalk up the missed playoffs to the injury stuff. So I'm...
Yeah.
I had a small concern in the back of my head. I forget what percentage I said, 5 or 8 or 13 or something percent in the back of my head. that this is the way this is going to go. But I was ultimately like, you know what? No, cooler heads will prevail. They'll do the right thing. This is a different new age, new page for the Kings. And now we're here freaking less than a week later at... Yeah, hey, no extension, tabling talks. Till when? For what? You have all the time in the world right now.
What else? Yeah.
What do you have going on? Rather than just sit down and go, Mike, here's the... You sit down and you go, Mike, this is... We want to keep you around. What's it going to take to stay? He says, 15 a year. And they go, well, that's a little much. What do you, okay, now you hash it out. You get to a middle ground. You sign a deal and you're good. And if you're not happy with them, if you're like, yeah, we need to see one more year, then just move on now, because that's not a feasible way to go about building a team.
Yeah, that's what my friend Sean Cunningham says on the podcast, on the Kingsbeat podcast all the time. He's like, if you're not going to do this, which is your prerogative, if you're not going to bring him back on a contract, then fire him now.
Yes.
And go find the guy that you want to lead the team forward. Go ahead and hire him now.
Mm-hmm.
Because as of right now, like, that's, you can't kind of have it both ways.
No.
Like, that you just can't. And so you
that's
figure it out.
Works.
And I would also point out, like, look, winning matters, right? Winning is a huge thing in the NBA.
It is the thing.
And that's how guys like De'Aaron Fox make All-NBA 1 year, and the next year they fall off the All-NBA because the team didn't win nearly as much. He was a better player. Statistically speaking, he was a better player this year than he was the year before. Like, you're super close to getting just, like, lost in the weeds with your franchise again.
Yeah.
Where you're not moving the right way. Like, this team should be looking at Denver, Minnesota, Dallas.
OKC.
OKC. Those four teams, and saying, we're not as good as them. How do I find a player and maybe a second player in my rotation, a top five player in my rotation, a starter to make me take the jump, and then a second player that can help me match up with some of these teams that can, like, help me make this jump?
Yes.
That's what the focus should be right now.
I totally agree.
It should not be on, we got to scrap this whole thing, everybody's all in, but we don't really care. Like, again, when a coach loses a locker room, it's time to go.
Yes.
Mike Brown hasn't lost a locker room.
Very much the opposite.
Yes.
They were bought in defensively at the end of the year.
They were good defensively by the end of the year.
They were very, very good defensively.
Yes. I mean, it's a very confusing situation. But when you're looking at the way your team is built and the way these other teams are built, like, very specifically, go back to what Jokic said. The Minnesota Timberwolves were built to beat us. Mm-hmm. Same guy built both teams. Same exact guy. Mm-hmm. He left one team, went to the other, and he built the counter piece.
Mm-hmm.
He basically is playing chess by himself, where he just keeps switching the board. Mm-hmm. He's got the opposing team. You have to figure out how to get over the hump and how to get into that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Stop playing checkers. Start playing chess like the other guys are playing,
mm-hmm.
because that's how you actually compete for a championship.
Mm-hmm.
You're close. You're really close. You got a culture. You got it. Everybody's in line, but you have to improve the talent on the roster. This was not a coaching issue. I don't even think it's a player on the, as much as it is straight up, you got to have more talent, and you have to make a move to make, not to make a move. You have to make a move because you're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't see that, if you're blinded by something, and you think some other coach can do smoke and mirrors and get you to the championship. The Indiana Pacers just smoked and mirrored their way through two rounds of playoffs because superstars got hurt in both first and second round, mm-hmm. got to the Eastern Conference Finals and got stomped.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave it a fight. But that's what you're asking, basically. Can we get somebody to smoke a mirror away to where the Pacers are? And
if they are of the mind, watching the Kings play basketball this year, that this is a championship caliber roster that a new coach just needs to put the puzzle pieces in the right place, then the Kings have a way bigger problem than we are discussing now.
Amen.
So, the Mike Brown contract situation, I thought for sure that it would get settled at some point, but no, it appears it's going the other direction, but we will continue discussing that whenever news comes out. Because this is now priority number one for the Kings this offseason. We had an interesting Kings trade idea come out from Andy Bailey.
Okay.
Of Bleacher Report. And it is the most obvious Kings yes I think I've ever seen in a trade proposal.
Yeah, the Kings already made that deal if it's out there.
Yeah.
Well, plus, Kyle, tonight at 5 p.m., we have Game 4, the Minnesota Timberwolves at Dallas Mavericks. Is it a sweep? I have it right here on ESPN 1320.
You, the organic plug. We're proud of you right now. The Insiders are sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320. Second hour coming up right now.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.